Glad you're here. We're going to do this workshop on taking some next steps with the subject of lament. So hopefully you were here this morning and you heard my plenary talk on that particular subject. What I want to do today in this workshop is to try and help you take some next steps with the hopes that you could take a concept, perhaps that was maybe a little new for you this morning and want to kind of dial into it a little bit deeper in terms of what are the basic elements of that. And then I actually have some worksheets that I want us to work through so that you could see how this might apply in your own life or how you might use it perhaps in a small group setting or a counseling setting or things of that sort. So I have a number of personal and corporate applications that I want to review with you at the end, and then also leave enough time, 15-20 minutes, for a conversation about questions that you have and things of that sort, okay? So, first question, were all of you in the session this morning? Raise your hand if you were there. Was anyone not there this morning? Okay, two people, three people. Okay, very good. So let me just give you a quick overview then of the subject of lament. Basically, lament is more than just simply an expression of grief. Lament in the scriptures is a prayer that takes our pain and points it toward God. The Psalms are filled with lament. Almost a third of the Psalms, some would argue even half of the Psalms, are Psalms of lament. And Psalms of lament walk through a particular sort of movement, if you will, that involves four key parts. Now, if you study lament in depth, other authors, other writers have six different movements. I've tried to consolidate it down into four that I think represent maybe a summary of other elements. So on your handouts that you have, if you take a look at the second page here, you'll see the four movements. And let me just describe those to you, and we're going to illustrate those in a moment by looking at a couple different laments. So it begins with turn to God. Some call this the address. So if you want to write down the word address next to it, essentially, in a lament, what it means is that they're not staying in grief, but instead they're talking to God. So lament, by definition, is a prayer. And that's what makes it different than just the stages of grief, like Kubler Ross or someone who's just sad. So not all sadness is lament. Lament is a very specific language of prayer where we're turning to God by virtue of what's going on inside of our souls. And so you could define then this turn to God as an address to God such that what follows is a prayer. And then what you need to know is that sometimes turning to God or this address is combined with complaint. So what you need to know also about, like any song or any piece of poetry, it's not always linear. So these four movements are generally found in all laments, but they aren't going to be found like one, two, three, four. Sometimes trust is right in the middle, or in one case, Psalm 88, it doesn't end in trust. It just sort of, it's the one psalm, which just kind of leaves you hanging there. Now, some would suggest that Psalm 89 is the completion of Psalm 88, but Psalm 88 is the only lament that doesn't bring some sort of resolution or some sort of praise at the end. So each of these elements are a part of every aspect of lament in some way. The second movement is to bring your complaint. And essentially, a complaint is the central ingredient for what makes a lament a lament. If you don't complain, it's not a lament. If there's no expression of grief, if there's no statement about what's wrong, then there really is no lament that's taking place. Yet what's odd, and I think you probably agree with this or have seen this, is that this is the one thing that it seems like in evangelical Christianity, we're most uncomfortable with. We tend to hush people when they say the very things that the psalmist says. We would even be maybe uncomfortable with the things that they've said. And so what lament does is it helps us to realize that what's being said here is not only really important, but it also, frankly, is a biblical expression, provided that what they're saying doesn't become a cul-de-sac for grief, but rather that what their complaint is a conduit that moves them somewhere. So what you need to know about lament is that it's a movement. It's moving people somewhere. It's moving a congregation somewhere. Think of lament like tracks. It's something that you put your grief and your sorrow on, and the idea is that these movements are going to push that forward and to push it eventually to the matter of trust. Now, secondly, we have the asking boldly. which are specific statements where the psalmist is calling upon God to act boldly and into a manner that fits with his character. And so part of the tension of a lament, what causes the lament, and why I say that lament is Christian, is because Christians know God is good and this is not. And that's what creates the lament. God, you are in control, and this is crazy. And that creates the lament. I know that you're for me, but this doesn't feel like it. Thus, lament. So, lament is one of the most theologically rich things that a Christian does, because they live in the midst of their pain, and they acknowledge that two things are true at the exact same time. On the first hand, this is awful. And on the other hand, you're amazing. And Christians live in that tension. They live in that world. And so that the lament moves from a position of pain to the hopeful arena of promise. If you don't know about the promise, then there's no reason to lament. If you don't believe that God is sovereign, if you don't believe that he's good, if you don't believe that he's in control of all things, then why would you? You're just complaining to complain. You're not complaining because you believe that God could do something about it. And so there's this wrestling with who and what God is. And that's where asking boldly comes in, that we're asking God to do things. And it's remarkable. We don't have time today. I could give you a list of about 15 different categories of things that stuff that the psalmist prayed for God to do. And it's a remarkable list of the things that the psalmist asked God to do boldly. And then finally, it ends with trust, which is this affirmation of God's worthiness to be trusted. And oftentimes, this also is engaged with praise. So praise and trust sometimes mingle together. Some authors and scholars who study lament would say that the ending of lament is praise. I like trust better because I think that praise is an expression of trust. Sometimes the ending of the psalm doesn't sound like praise. It just simply is a statement like, God, you're in control. And we think of praise more like worship or saying something to God, affirming who he is. And a lot of times the psalmists, they just end with like just firm proclamations of I'm coming back to what I really believe in. Another key word, and I talked about this morning, or key words that you need to know, are words like but, words like and words like yet. So I kind of walked really quickly through something that's super important. In the Hebrew, there's this word called the vav. It's a V-A-V or W-A-W. If you want to impress your friends, you say, what'd you learn at the conference? I learned about vav adversatives, right? They're like, what is that? Sounds painful. Vav adversatives is basically words that mark out a distinction between what's been said previously and a change that's coming. And every lament has some sort of vav adversative in it. And so as you're reading lament psalms, one of the key words to look for is the word but, the word yet, or in some cases there's no actual word but or and or yet, but the sentence fits the tone of but or fits the tone of yet. And so that vav adversative adversative is still there. It's just not there explicitly with the words like but or yet or and. So that's the turning point in the lament. All right, so we got trust, we got complain, complain, ask boldly, and then choose to trust. Those are the categories of what we talked about this morning. Let me show you a couple examples of this. Take your Bible, go over to Psalm 22. And this is the one I suspect that we're the most familiar with, because this is the lament prayer that Jesus prayed. Interestingly enough, you all know Romans 8, right? All things work together for good. In the middle of that, Paul talks about sheep. Remember that section? He says, for we like sheep going to the slaughter, right? We're being killed all the day long. He quotes Psalm 44. What's remarkable is that in the midst of some of the greatest promises in the Bible about God being for us, Paul pulls from a lament psalm and puts a lament psalm right in the middle of that and shows us how you can take the most difficult moments of life where you feel like we're like sheep going to the slaughter, We're like those being killed all the day long, and you can wrap the promises of God around them. And that's what lament does. It takes the worst pains of life, and it wraps the promises of God around them. So let's look at Psalm 22, and we'll see here the flow. I'll get there. Sorry, I was in Proverbs 22. This is well known because Proverbs 22 contains these words, my God, why have you forsaken me? Why are you so far from saving me from the words of my groaning? So those are obviously the words that Jesus said on the cross. Jesus quoted often from the laments. So when you think of turning, my God, there's the turn. Where's the complaint? What words? Good. Why have you forsaken me? What else? Good. Where else? Keep looking. Good. I cry, but you do not answer. Okay. Now look at verse 3. What do you see? What's the first word? Yet. What is that word? What is that? What's that? Vav adversative. Say it together. Vav adversative. Again, vav adversative. See, your biblical Hebrew scholars already. There it is. Yet you are holy, enthroned in the praises of Israel. Verse 6, he goes back. I'm a worm and not a man. Verse 8, he trusts in the Lord. Let him deliver him. Let him rescue me, for he delights in him. Then he says, yet you are he who took me from the womb. You made me trust at my mother's breast. On you was I cast from my birth. Verse 11, be not far from me, for trouble is near. There is none to help. What is that? Of the four movements, what is that? Be not far from me. What's he doing? Asking. Good, he's asking. He's pleading with God. So we see the address, we see complaint, we see the asking, many bulls in verses 12 to 13. I'm poured out like water in verses 14 and 15. Here we go back to complaining again. And then verse 19, what do you see? But, what is that? Vav adversative. Good. But you, O Lord, do not be far. So see how it's not, you can't think of this like verse 19 is about complaint and verse 20 is about asking. Sometimes the complaining, the asking, even the address, they happen all in the same verse because it's poetry and or a song, and the hymn writer or the psalmist is not concerned about a linear movement. He's trying to make a point and make it emotionally. Sometimes he's drawing from these things from all over the place. And then verse 20, deliver my soul from the sword. He's asking. Verse 23, you who fear the Lord, praise him. Verse 24, he has not despised or abhorred the affliction of the afflicted. From you comes my praise in the great congregation. The afflicted shall eat. Verse 26, and be satisfied. Those who seek the Lord shall praise the Lord forever. And then here comes the trust. All the ends of the earth shall remember and turn to the Lord. All the families of the nations shall worship before you, for kingship belongs to the Lord. He rules over the nations. See the trust? All the prosperous of the earth shall eat and worship. Before him shall bow down all who go down to the dust, even the one who could not keep himself alive. Posterity shall serve him. It shall be told of the Lord to the coming generation. They shall come and proclaim his righteousness to a people yet unborn, that he has done it. See? So there's the movement. So the all laments move in one of those sort of categories, sometimes moving them inside one another, sometimes in a directly linear fashion. Let me show you another one. Go over to Psalm 13. This one is actually we'll save Psalm 13. I want to come back to that one. Let me hold that one. Go to Psalm 3. And we'll walk through this one. All right, so let's start. I'm going to make it a little harder on you this time. I'm not going to give you the answer. We'll start here. Where do you see the turning? Where is the address? What words? No, that's the... when I say turning, I don't mean the vav adversative. I mean where you're turning to God in prayer, so the address. So let's start with... Okay, good. So he starts out, O Lord, right? So there it is. Don't miss that. Because if you're trying to help somebody who's in the middle of grief, Like, that is the step that they have to take. They have to start talking to God about their pain. That sometimes those who study lament will talk about the disorientation of grief and the reorientation of lament. What happens when things fall apart, there's a disorientation of life, and what lament does is it reorients the thoughts, and it turns the person to begin talking to God. And what I've found is that people tend to run in two particular ditches, and whether it's the ditch of denial, how you doing today? I'm fine. When the reality is inside, they are not fine. They're often in denial or they're in despair. They're convinced that God isn't listening. They're convinced that nothing's ever going to change. So they've given up praying about particular subjects. They've gotten weary of the rehearsing of the pain. And so as a result, they just think God doesn't listen. Nothing's going to change. Therefore, they stop. And then that not only affects how they handle their pain and their grief, but it also begins to extend into other areas of their life. This is why some people, in the midst of some sort of difficulty, can actually serve to not only create despair in one category, but it creates despair in lots of categories, because their silence in one area begins to extend to silence in other areas. If God won't listen to me in this, then God must not listen to me at all. So you got denial and you got despair. And I find a lot of believers that are in either of those two ditches when it comes to the pain and the grief that they're dealing with. So Psalm 3, it says, O Lord, and then what do we see next? How many are my foes? What is that?
Complain.
Good. What's next? Many are rising against me. What's that? Good. Many are saying of my soul, there is no salvation for him in God. What's that? Good. Verse 3, there it is. But, what is that again? Vav adversative, right? O Lord, you are a shield about me, my glory and the lifter of my head. So he actually pulls in trust, right? And then verse 4, I cried aloud to the Lord, and he answered me from his holy hill. I lay down and slept. I woke again, for the Lord sustained me. So what he's doing here, although the asking isn't as explicit as it is in other texts, it's clear that he is thinking about the Lord's sustaining grace and the way in which he has prayed and sought the Lord. And then in verse 7, we see a very clear calling upon God. What does he say?
Arise,
O Lord, save me, O my God. What's interesting, the laments often have language in regards to God where it seems as though they're commanding God to act. Like, wake up, God. Arise, save me. Come, help me. And the idea is asking boldly. And then verse 8, salvation belongs to the Lord. Your blessing be upon your people. He ends in trust. So there it is again. The turn to God. The complaint, what's wrong, ask boldly. And then finally, trust. Now, in the front part of your handout, what I did is I put together a list of lament psalms. This is a complicated genre, and you just need to know, like, not all laments are the same, and not all laments, even within particular categories, are the same. And so we have different kinds of laments. So we have a personal lament, which are an individual is experiencing some sort of difficulty. They're vocalizing their pain, vocalizing their grief, vocalizing their fear, or other some kind of strong emotion. So those are our lament psalms, and it'd be great for you just to read, and you'll see how many different kinds of expressions there are for those sorts of moments. And then we have corporate lament. And this is where we have a group of people or the entire nation, maybe in the case of the nation of Israel, expressing pain or grief or fear or other some kind of emotion. And this is done together. And so this is similar to the individual, but there's a different tone to it. Now, what you also might not realize is there's a kind of lament that's called a penitential lament or a repentant lament. Many of you will know Psalm 51, David's penitent lament psalm after the sin with Bathsheba. So there are other sorts of laments that are designed to be the expression of an individual who has sinned. In fact, one of the ways that lament can be uniquely helpful is by reminding people about their need to more regularly lament over their sin. A couple weeks ago, we used a a prayer of confession from the Book of Common Prayer in one of our worship services, just to remind us that we need to lament over our sins. You know, James talks about those who are laughing and partying, wail and mourn. Let your laughter be turned to mourning, your joy to gloom. One of the ways that laments help us is not just to help people who are in pain realize what the solution is in terms of how they think and how they feel, but it's also, lament can serve as a teacher to us and remind us how to be able to think about the world. So apart from the Psalms, what other book is dominated by lament-oriented themes? Can you think of another book of the Bible?
Lamentations.
Very good. How many of you have ever heard a series of sermons on the book of Lamentations? Let me see your hands. Interesting. You know, I think a lot of people treat Lamentations like it's the book of, like it's the state of Iowa. They know that it's there. They know that it's there. They just can't wait to get through it. So, right? So that's, I'm just sorry.
All right.
Nebraska. All right. Nebraska. Okay, fine. The point is you'll remember next time you're driving through one of those long states, and my state is long, you know, north to south, that we just ignore the Book of Lamentations. And yet the Book of Lamentations is a really important book, not because it's the expression of grief by virtue of an individual, but rather it's written to a people to never forget what happens when a people neglects God. So when we sing the song, Great is Thy Faithfulness, I was at a camp recently, I saw a painting on the wall. It said, the steadfast Lord, love of the Lord never ends, His mercies are new every morning. They put that up there. And the picture was this beautiful scene of this sort of like Thomas Kincaid painting, this little cottage in a wood, you know, with flowers and a flowing brook, and the sun was up, and it just looked absolutely gorgeous. The steadfast love of the Lord. The problem is that that's not the scene that statement is made over. That statement is made over what Puerto Rico looks like right now. That statement is made over the devastation of a nation that was completely destroyed, or sections of Aleppo. Like, that's the scene. Like, paint that and then say, the steadfast love of the Lord never ceases, His mercies never come to an end. So what Lamentations was meant to be was a reminder of the lessons that sinful people need to be reminded about in light of the brokenness of the world and the holiness of God. And in that way, lament can actually serve to reinforce important truths that we tend to forget in the midst of all of our sort of jovial living and our penchant for triumphal, this is all going to work out sort of just fine. But there are histories where recession doesn't go away, where problems of a particular culture have gone too far. And lament reminds us that those moments happened in human history. And so lament in that way becomes a teacher. So why are repentant laments helpful? Because they're a reminder that our sin is a big deal. When I was teaching on this in my church, a guy stopped me in the gym and he said, "Man, I'm loving this lament series. It's really helping me win the battle with sin." And I was like, "Tell me why." He said, "Because as I'm hearing about lament and I'm lamenting over sin in the world, it's reminding that what's wrong with the world is wrong with me. And so I'm lingering in lament, not because I'm sorry over my sin, but so that I can become sorry over my sin." You see, that's the point. So repentant psalms or laments are helpful in that respect. Then imprecatory. Oh, here's another category. Imprecatory are lament psalms written by individuals or groups expressing outrage or a strong desire for justice. These are the ones where, you know, you hear really strong language that is used, asking for God to slay the wicked, even in one lament saying, "Dash their little ones against the rocks," or "Break their teeth, O God." I mean, can you imagine somebody praying that on a Sunday morning? The point of the imprecatory psalms is that I've been wronged, and I long for justice to be done. Now, these can be really useful in the fact that I encounter a fair number of embittered people who don't know what to do about the pain that they felt in the past, and don't know what to do with the appropriate longing for justice to be done. In some respects, in some circles, we so overemphasize the need for them to be kind and gracious and to forgive, which they should be gracious, that we forget that the demand for justice is not illegitimate. And so what do you do with your desire for justice and the command to be able to love? Where do you go with that longing for justice? And the answer is imprecatory psalms. You take it to the Lord and you lay it at His feet, and we do what Peter talked about. We continue our entrusting ourselves to the one who judges justly. That's how you love enemies. That's how you pray for persecutors. You lay the injustice at the feet of the King of Kings and Lord of Lords. You don't deny the reality of the need for justice, nor do you downplay it or act as though that's not a legitimate desire, but instead imprecatory helps that to be expressed. And then two other categories. There's partial, where there's particular psalms that have an aspect of lament to them. And then there also are psalms, and I just categorize these as debatable. Depending on who you ask, there could be anywhere from a third to half of the psalms could be considered lament. And here are some that could be and are considered by some to be lament, but the ones on the top half are more generally accepted as these are surely lament-oriented psalms. Okay, so with that, I've been talking now for about 40 minutes here, or 30 minutes or so. What questions do you have initially on this? And then we're going to dive into some work. We're actually going to work through Psalm 13 and then see how we could use this maybe in a small group or a counseling. Any questions on that overview and that some additional teaching on the subject of lament? Questions that you have? In regards to lament, so where do people get stuck? And the hardest part, I find that either they are silent, so they don't pray at all, or secondly, they get stuck in complaint, and they just keep going around. It's like this nasty grief merry-go-round. And I know from my own experience and pastorally that grieving people can be incredibly self-centered. And they can just believe that nobody understands, and then, you know, and people say stupid things when you're grieving. A friend of mine that was I was talking about this with her, like, yeah, man, we were at a funeral for our daughter, and she died. She's a special needs child, and somebody came up to them in the receiving line, and of all moments said, we're so sorry. We know just how you feel. Our dog died last week, and we're just so sad. So. You know, just, we're so sorry. I mean, you just want to punch him in the nose. Like, really? Your dog? I mean, that's it. So we don't, you know, we get stuck because we hear that, and then we're just throw up our hands, and like, nobody understands. Or we go to church, and my guess is that your church is like most churches, that the standard diet of Sunday morning worship is tipped towards celebration. Which, there's nothing inherently wrong with that, but if you're grieving, it's a really lonely place to come to, and as a result, you can begin to think, nobody understands, and people end up walking away from church, for that matter. So I think the complaint piece is more often where folks get stuck in. If we can give them a voice and help them know what to do with their complaint while pushing them along in the Psalms of Lament, I think it can be really, really helpful. Question in the back? Absolutely, yep.
And I just wanted to mention, you know, people that are ongoing, they're just in some kind of a season, the wall, the dark night of the soul, that it just keeps going. Sometimes we can't help them get past that, and they need to go through that, and it's going to glorify God, and we can trust Him with that. But, you know, that really, that's what I keep thinking of to pray for myself and for other people going through difficult times, is that the first part, you know, God and go to God in prayer with it, getting people to look there, even, you know, it sounds like it should be easy, but it, you know, life can blindside us.
Absolutely. Look, one of the hardest things to do when you're in pain and you have confusion as to what's going on is to pray. I mean, it's a prayer prayed in faith, a lament prayer prayed in faith is one of the riskiest things that you can do, because when you pray to God, there's a little glimmer of hope. Well, I'm going to pray believing somehow that God's not going to hear me, but that he's going to help. And what if over weeks and months and years, you don't get an answer that you are wanting? You begin to think God doesn't hear, he doesn't listen, he doesn't care. And that's a really challenging position for a person's soul to be in. The other thing really important that you said, I just want to emphasize it to be sure that you hear that, which is that lament isn't like, oh, I go through Psalm 13 on the 27th of September, and then I'm done. So lament is something that you come back to over and over and over as you're taking steps towards whatever you want to call it, healing, where you take steps towards orientation. And if you're walking with someone through a difficult and dark season, you can expect for that to take a lot longer than what you would necessarily think. And what lament does is give you a place to be able to meet that person and just to linger there with them and to walk them through Psalm 13, for instance, even though at that moment maybe verses 1 and 2 is where they're at. And maybe in a couple weeks they'll be at the end of the psalm and they're not necessarily in the beginning. And rather than either denying the pain that they're in or trying to overly dissect it, like, well, let me explain to you what's going on, lament provides us an opportunity to be God-centered while also being really compassionate. So I think there's both pastorally and small group leading and counseling ministry, like, lament is a really, really helpful tool in the toolbox. It's just remarkable to me how often we miss opportunities to lament with people. We just don't even think about it as a category. We hush people in their pain. We try and over-explain what's going on. And we try to get them to the solution, because the reality is most of us, their pain makes me nervous. Like, I don't like that. I don't want that to happen to me. So please don't say that, because that makes me uncomfortable. Instead of entering in and going, look, the Bible says, my God, why have you forsaken me? And just living in that reality. Okay? Over here, you had your hand up? Yeah. So is there a danger to have a family carry that pain corporately?
Yeah.
Well, certainly there would be. You need to be wise in terms of what context. And, you know, I mean, there's pain that's best expressed in a counseling office. There's pain that's best expressed in a small group. And some pain that you can address publicly and would be appropriate, depending on the scope or the nature of the pain. So, you know, we'll lament over cancer coming back with a child in the church, and we'll not only pray for him, but we'll also lament and just say, God, we hate cancer. And we don't, this boy's in our small group named Tyler, we don't want Tyler to have cancer anymore, and it's come back. And Lord, we're scared. And we want, Lord, why haven't you answered us? But we're going to trust that you, see, vow of adversity, but we're going to trust that your ways are good. We're going to trust, Lord, that you can heal him. So we're going to ask that you would, but we're going to believe that you're good at the end. It's having the fully orbed reality of lament. I think that's helpful. So I could give you lots of other examples. But so you need to have wisdom to know this isn't a moment just for a collective church vomit, right, where you're just kind of, you know, just going overboard at one level. At the same time, I think if there's any danger in the church at present, it's that we don't address the complaints. We just would rather go on to the end product. We want to read the end of the book. We don't want to deal with the tension in the middle. Hey, brother. Yeah, so again, that list of lament psalms is somewhat fluid, and I do remember that someone suggested it probably should be on the debatable list. I haven't studied Psalm 73 enough to know what are the the dynamics that are involved. I will tell you this, that in general, the majority of folks who list out lament psalms would not put Psalm 73 in the top 40, if you will, for some reason. I haven't studied that carefully enough to know exactly why that that is. Just as a quick look, it looks more like a prayer related to trust and asking God for strength than it does necessarily for a lament and a complaint. So I'm not. I'd have to look at that. So I'm not entirely sure. It's a good one to think about. Yeah. Language to do what?
When you say, invite them into praying prayers of lament.
And from a corporate standpoint or
in a counseling setting.
Yeah, great. Let me hold that because that's what we're going to do in just a second here, and then we can apply it even. So let me see if that answers. If that doesn't answer your question, what we do next, then raise it again and say, well, that didn't quite answer it, and maybe you could ask it again. Another what?
Because of the personal nature of many of these lament psalms, it would be best for one-on-one prayer. It would be best if an individual is broken over grief that we would take them aside and pray one-on-one. I don't understand a lot about the corporate prayer for lamenting, but I'm sure that there is a place for it.
Yeah. Well, let me give you an example, and you're certainly right at one level. I would just encourage us to think a little bit more broadly. That particular prayer summit that I referenced where I had invited people to write their own laments and then to come and sit down. So I knew there was at least one couple in our staff that was struggling with adoption and infertility. I had no idea there was four. Like that just completely blew my mind. And so after she prayed and began to lament and demonstrated the beauty and the power of it, it like opened a door and people came out of the woodwork, so to speak, and it empowered those people who feel like, yes, I feel the same way and I want to follow your example in terms of dealing honestly with what's going on in my soul and trusting in the Lord at the same time. So, and I didn't say this morning, but you know, it's also remarkable. This is no guarantee. 1 year later, all four of those couples, their prayers were answered, and each of them either had a child that was conceived or they had adopted a child. I have a picture of all four children, and it's just, I call them the lament babies because they were conceived and birthed out of that moment. I don't share that necessarily publicly like that because I don't want people to think, oh, so here's the ingredient to get a baby. You lament, and then God's, because I've also prayed with couples where that has never happened, and despite long seasons of lament, for whatever reason, the Lord hasn't answered the prayer that they've wanted. So we don't want to see lament as a formula to get God to do what we want Him to do. It's the language that we use in the midst of our loss. All right, take your sheets. I'll come back to you just a second. And let's go down. Let's do some work here, shall we? Let's take, let's see. What shall we do? Let's take Psalm 13. So go to Psalm 13, and this is a sheet that you could use in a small group setting. This is a sheet that you could use in a counseling situation, and what I'd like you to do is to, on the left-hand side, just write the numbers 13 in the top, Psalm 13, and then what I want you to do is just work through the song. I'm going to give you 5 minutes. Are there any more sheets available over there? I think there's a stack over there. And what I want you to do is to write down what you see in the text in the various sections, like what we did publicly a few moments ago, okay? And give you 5 minutes to do that. Do it quickly, because then we're going to move over to the right-hand column and see if we can translate this into our own lament. I said 5 minutes. Sorry, you're going to lament the time loss here. Our time is running out, and I want to be able to get to more Q&A and then also next section. So I'm going to speed it up here. So in Psalm 13, where do you see turn to God? What words? What's that?
Oh, Lord.
Oh, Lord. Very good. So usually the turning to God is pretty short. In some cases, it might be a little bit longer. One of the ones that I love is Psalm 77. I love this one that says, I cry aloud to God. In the day of my trouble, I seek the Lord. In the night, my hand is stretched out without wearying. My soul refuses to be comforted. When I remember God, I moan. I love that. So helpful. When I meditate, my spirit faints. So the idea is this turning and this praying. Okay, good. Secondly, what complaint is in Psalm 13 or complaints? Okay, will you forget me forever? What else? Hide your face from me. What else? How long must I take counsel in my soul? All right, good. Yep, good. Enemies being exalted. All right, now what about asking boldly? Say it again. Okay, good. He's asking for the answer. Good. Okay, enlighten my eyes. Good. All right, and then trust. Good. What else? Good. Trust and faithful love. What else? Good. Rejoice in deliverance. So notice the definitive language. I have trusted in your mercy. My heart shall rejoice in your salvation. I will sing to the Lord. Notice the choosing there to trust. So all of this pain is true. It's true. I don't understand. It's all true. And yet I choose to trust. So you need to understand that grief is not tame. Questions don't need to go away before you start trusting. So questions and trust can coexist. That's what a lot of people don't understand. That's what lament helps us to see, is that questions and trust can coexist. Having trust doesn't always mean that those questions just simply go away. Or in some cases, I go to bed trusting and I wake up and I'm questioning. Or reverse is, I wake up and I'm trusting, but by the end of the day, I'm tired, I'm worn out, and I'm beginning to question again. And I go to bed, and I wake up the next morning, and I'm using lament in order to help reorient my soul. All right, now, yes?
Do you think in the word trust is submitting, that there's a willingness to submit our will to His? So this is trouble, this is pain. I don't understand. I've got questions. But you're over this and your sovereignty, and I'm going to trust you by submitting.
Absolutely. Sure. Yep. The challenge is, though, I think that some people then define trust or submitting as not questioning.
No.
Right? And so that's where I would say absolutely, but I think somehow we've wrongly defined at times what submission actually looks like. Like that I can submit to the Lord even though I still don't understand, or I still don't like this, but I still can submit to your will. And that some folks think that submission means that I don't have any questions anymore. Well, I have a boatload of questions about why God does what He does, but I still am trusting. And the words I like to use is that my trust then eclipses my questions. So that my questions still exist, but another object has come in the forefront, so that trust is more significant than my questions, but it doesn't mean that my questions are gone. Sure, absolutely. Yeah. Right. Yep. Mm-hmm. Paul talked about that in when he said, I sought the Lord to have this removed from me, but the Lord learned that God's grace was sufficient for me, and that strength was perfected in weakness. So absolutely, as long as we understand that when God supplies grace, some people again think that if the grace comes, the questions vanish. So the grace comes to help us deal with the unresolved issues that are going to may be there and may be resolved, but in many cases are not. Okay?
Pastor, what do you do?
Yep.
So then you just kind of honor where they're at and then hopefully move them along, or what are you trying to do?
Yeah, so let's use the worksheet there and let's actually take that scenario. So let's create a situation. Let's say, and I'm just going to pick one out of the air, okay? Let's say there's a woman, her name is Sue. Is anyone named Sue in the room here? Okay, good. So a woman is Sue, and she's found out that her husband has now violated their marriage. He's committed adultery. Now it's the second time, okay? So she has all of these understandable, frustrating emotions, and you're meeting with her 4 days after she's found out. Okay, so that goes to your question. And her marriage is questionable in front of her, doesn't necessarily know where her husband is at, et cetera, et cetera. And even if he said, "I'm repentant and broken," she's like, "Well, this is number two," you know. So what I want you to do is I want you to write out, imagine you're Sue, I want you to write out Psalm 13 for her. What would she need to say? What should she say? What could she say? What might she say in light of what Psalm 13 is saying? Okay, so really quick, write down, what would it sound like for Sue to turn to God? What would it look like for her to complain? What would it look like for her to ask boldly? And what would it sound like for her to trust? Our time is flying. I love talking about this with you and hope you're enjoying it as well. Hope that it's helpful. You keep working. Let's start with the first one. What would it sound like for Sue to turn to God? Who would offer a statement? Why don't you just read what you've written in your turn to God section for a woman named Sue. So, yeah, go ahead, brother. What'd you write? Yeah, you wrote. Yeah.
So you're saying I'm a boy named Sue.
Yes, you are. Yep. Yeah, you're a boy named Sue. That could be another lament that we could go through, but we'll start with that. So why, oh Lord, have I been named Sue? Okay, go ahead.
I put first her turn, not to say those, and that would be my father.
Good. Good, great. Okay, somebody else. What else could you say, could she say in turn? What's that?
God.
God. Oh, God. Oh, God, right? Good, yeah. I mean, talk about, wow, that's awesome. Oh, God. All right, what else? My Redeemer. Thank you. Good. That's already pushing it one direction, isn't it? That's great. Good. All right. What else?
Abba Father.
Abba Father. Good. What else? One more. All right. We'll move on to complain. We'll take a complaint from this table over here. What complaint would you have?
Why has this happened again?
Right. Good. All right.
I hate it.
All right. Okay. All right, good. What can I do? Good. Usually complaints have either the words like what, how, why, those sort of words connected to them. Not always. So what else? Yep.
Why am I not enough for
you? Ooh, great statement. Look at that. There's the depth of complaint there. How many women whose husbands have committed adultery feel that and have no place to go with that statement? So good. All right, what else?
The husband you gave me is unfaithful.
Good. Why did you give me this husband? Right? Right? Very good. That's not only directed towards him, it's directed towards God. Excellent. Good. All right. What else?
Inappropriate language
to use. You certainly could. Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah. There's strong words that are used in the scriptures. All right. So how about ask boldly? What's the what could we ask God for in the situation? Psalm 13.
Help.
Good. What else? Fix my marriage. Good. What else?
Change his heart.
Good.
Kill my husband.
Yeah, in precatory psalms. There we go. Strength. Okay. What else?
Keep me from hurting him.
All right. Good. Protect him from me. All right. What else? Ask boldly.
Change my heart.
All right. Heal my brokenness. Change my heart. Good. What's that, ma'am? Help me to forgive. Good. Good.
Relieve my pain.
Good. So, I mean, just think of all things like boom, 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 boom. The prayers are as wide as the emotions that we feel in pain. And here's, friends, why lament is so important. Without this language, we limit the scope of the kind of things that we talk to the Lord about. And just think of the breadth and what there's a story behind everything that you're saying, like the opportunity to kind of unpack that. And for me to even say, no, why did you choose that? And there's reasons, and as you're talking with someone, you can even begin to unpack, now, why did you write this? Okay, now we go to trust. Last thing, what could you say at the end?
All glory to you.
All glory to you. Good. What else?
Your will be done.
Your will be done.
But you are the covenant-keeping God who is forever.
Good. You are the covenant-keeping God. So husband is going to keep his covenant. Believe that you will. Okay, good. What else?
You are my rock.
Good. My rock.
Your grace is sufficient.
Good. So come back to your question here. What I would do in that scenario is I would give them like a homework assignment and say, I want you to write out a psalm of what you might say someday. So if they said, I can't say this now, no problem, no problem. Because the beautiful thing is that like Psalm 13 verses 1, 2, and 3 are as inspired and four are as inspired as verses 5 and 6. So in the case of one counseling scenario where this guy who I mentioned, I just said, look, you're between verses 4 and 5 right now. And we didn't get here overnight. You're not going to get out of this overnight. And we need to start helping you move from verse 4 into verse 5 on that sort of vav adversative. How do you start moving towards having a conversation with the Lord again? So I might ask that person to write down some things that they would like to be able to say in the future but can't at present. And I'd give them that assignment over and over and over so they start writing those things down. And then maybe a week, two, three, or a month, they actually might be able to pray and start move down those movements from complaint to ask boldly and then even to a point where they could say things that have some sort of trust quality to them. Okay? Now, back to your question. Did I answer it or what was it again? Got, yes. So how you invite them would be to do something similar to what I've done here. If it's like you're talking with somebody and they're struggling, say, hey, let's work through a lament psalm together. And how could you, you know, what would be the words that you would use? If it's someone in the context of your church that's just weeping or struggling, you can simply come alongside them and to pray over them what they would probably want to say. So I've come alongside some people before and say things like, Lord, I'm really tired of funerals, and I am sick of going to hospital rooms of teenagers who take their lives. I hate death. I hate this moment. Why, Lord, do we have this in the world? And so I pray that and talk about that suddenly invites it. While we have permission to talk to God like that? Yes. And to help people know that this is a divinely given language, a liturgy of loss that they can come into. It could also be a scenario where if someone is wrestling, that you read a psalm to them and just show them those particular verses and say, is this how you feel? And then you could pray the remaining part of the psalm over them. I'm struggling to answer your question a little bit because of the fact that I've just found the minute I open this door in any way, like just even the slightest, like people are, like they just start streaming through it. In my mind, the problem is not creating or inviting them as much as it is trying to deal with the onslaught of people once you open the door. It's just like people are longing for someone to understand and for the Bible to speak the language that they're wrestling with. Let's go ahead, you can follow up? Mm-hmm.
Just saying, I guess people want relief of pain, but by inviting them to pray lament psalms, I'm not offering them relief of pain, I'm offering them what?
Yeah, like you're offering them transitional language.
Yeah.
You're offering them a place. You're offering them a path through their wilderness, you're offering them a means to an eventual end. They may find relief, but lament is think of it as the car that they set in that moves them along. It's the path that they walk in, and you walk along together with them. Is that helpful? Okay. It's the transition from pain to promise. Lament is the space between those two.
Hope.
Hope, yes, but it's a process language of hope. So two questions in the back, and then we need to be done. We're at four. So, yep.
Yeah. First, thank you for your work on this. It's been very helpful. Thinking about congregationally, Sunday morning service, could you give us just some quick illustrations of how you use this practically?
Yep. Every year we have Sanctity of Human Life Sunday. Stats of how many babies are killed are one thing. When you stand up and lament the fact that 2.5 miles from my church is the largest abortion clinic in the state of Indiana, and when you start to pray, Lord, we lament the loss of life, we lament our callousness, we lament how many times we've driven by at Georgetown and 86th Street and not thought about the tragedy of what's happening behind the green pine trees that are there. You've taken a stat and you've changed it. People feel it. We had during Lamentations, we talked about sex trafficking in the city of Indianapolis. Had someone come up and share some things and then lead us in a lament prayer about sex trafficking. Same thing we did with opioid addiction. When racial issues have happened, this is one of the most helpful languages that, regardless of what you think about the background or the dynamics or the causality or all of that, at least we could agree, let's lament together over the fact that this is a problem and we need to figure out how, by God's grace, the church can speak into this. And so we can lament white supremacist ideology. We can lament police officers that feel misunderstood. We can lament African-American moms that have to say to their sons, when you go out, be very careful. And if a police officer stops you, keep your hands on the wheel. Don't reach for anything. And we can lament that that conversation has to happen in the United States in 2017. So pray that, right? So that suddenly changes the perspective and gives people a place that they can meet to, rather, whether or not you think that's true or real, or you can lament. It's like me putting my arm around my wife. A good husband weeps with his wife first before he starts diagnosing what her pain is, right? And so I think that's what the church needs to do. So that we know that we can speak the language of loss, whether it's a national crisis, a church crisis, a health issue in the church, something of that sort. Okay, last question here.
Related to that, is that something you do every week? Obviously, the details differ from week to week, but is it something you try to incorporate into each service?
We incorporate aspects of it into the service, but not in the same way and not to the same extent. So even though we have a large church, we will pray regularly for people in our church who are suffering by name, because we want our church to know that individual names of people are important to us and their individual pain matters, even in a church of 4,000. But then also we'll take moments in the church order of service for times of confession, times of sorrow over our own sin, or thinking about just what the loss means in our culture or in our society. But we do celebration really, really well. We're trying to still figure out how to do this lament thing at a corporate level better. So it's on our radar. We're still trying to figure out how to do that. So not the same every week, an element of it, but not to the same extent. Okay? It is 4:04. If you have other questions, I'd love to talk with you afterwards. And thanks for coming. Hope this was helpful.